Ramban that we didn't do, but I would like to take a little bit of a sort of a break in order to take a look at this article that we photocopied, and hopefully we'll get something out of this. If we're studying the Sugya Mekalkel, I thought this article would be worthwhile. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to watch the text inside. I'm not going to be reading the text, by and large. From time to time, I may ask you to follow me at a certain pace, a certain paragraph. But my general goal here is to isolate points, highlight points, which will be more of a Torah Shebaal Peh than the Torah Shebaksav. We're less interested in the text than I am in the ideas that he presents here. But I would like you to look inside as I go, just as I'm doing, and hopefully your eye will catch certain lines, and maybe you could underline them and highlight them. So first of all, he introduces this. Now let me just mention that this is an article taken from a pamphlet. It's a soft-covered pamphlet, which you can't even get a hold of. I borrowed it from my mechutin. It's called Hemi and Achamuni. And I'll talk about it a little bit later on, but, you know, our time is limited. So, again, he introduces the concept called Meleches Machsheves. And thank God we're familiar with all the sugyas that he quotes. So I'm very excited about that. First of all, the Gemara in Bava Kama, that's the sugya where he has unbeknown to him, he has a stone that's sitting on his lap, and he stands up, and the stone goes flying. And it goes from one rishus to another rishus. That's called Meleches Machsheves Patur. And the Gemara Chagiga, which has two derivatives from Meleches Machsheves. Number one, Melacha Shein Tzricha LeGufa. And number two, Mekalkel. So the Torah prohibits only Meleches Machsheves. Now he mentions our Mishnah. Our Mishnah speaks about a person who is ripping a garment in such a way that he's mekalkel, he ruins the garment. So we're not talking about a case of Mesdi Day. If you remember our sugya says that if it's his own relative and he's obligated in Kriya, that's one thing, but we're talking about Mesdi Alma. Or alternatively, we're talking about a person who rips his garment out of anger, and you're not allowed to do that. So in any event, that's called mekalkel, and call a mekalkel in Pturin. Fine. Now, it's interesting. You can have a scenario, a case where, let me put it this way, you can have two people in the exact same scenario, and if you took a video, you would not know the difference between Reuven and Shimon. They're both doing the same thing, each one on his own beged. Reuven is going to be chayav and Shimon will be potter. Reuven is called metaken and Shimon is called mekalkel. And what determines Reuven as a metaken and Shimon as a mekalkel? Kavana. What was his intention? So, for example, in Reuven's case, his intention was to rip stitches so that he could restitch it again in a more perfect way. Or alternatively, Reuven's kavana was in his mind that he should be mekayim the mitzvah of kriya al meso if it was his own relative, a close relative. Shimon, on the other hand, is just interested in ripping. Maybe he's angry. Whatever he's doing, he's ripping. Reuven, again in the video, it's exactly identical, is chayev, and Shimon is pot. And this is all derived from meleches machsheves. So the word machsheves means what? Thought. Do you follow? That's what I mentioned once back then about phenomenology. You know, that everything is, reality is dependent upon the conscious mind. It's not dependent upon the physical metzius that you see in front of your eyes. So Reuven is chayav, Shimon is potter. Reuven had a meleches machsheves to violate a melacha. He's doing something constructive, and it's a tikkun. Shimon does the exact same thing on his beged, but Shimon is potter because his intention was simply kilkul. He was mafsid the beged. And this distinction between Reuven and Shimon, Reuven's kavana in one way and Shimon in the other way, applies not just to Korea, but to an entire group or list of malachos. let me give you the list, and then we'll see what's common to this list. I think the list has four malachas on it. Let's see if I'm right. Number one, korea. Number two, mochek. Number three, soser. And number four, machave. Okay, you want to write those down. So you have number one is korea. Korea means to rip. Number two, mochek, which means to erase. Number three, soser, which means to demolish a structure. And number four, machabe, which means to extinguish a fire. What is unique about all these cases, and why in these four malachas specifically does kavana play the key role? Why is it absolutely the determining factor as to whether he's chayav for malacha or not? Don't all answer at once because I can't hear you.
Well, it reminds me of an earlier Rashi on the same topic. He used three different synonyms to describe Yodea, Bekavanah.
That was the Rashi in Chagiga, but there's another Rashi in the Sugya of Mechaber where Rashi actually mentions all these four. What is common to all these four?
They're all destructive.
By their very nature. You're removing something. You're erasing something. You're ripping something. You're demolishing something. You're extinguishing something. In all these four cases, inherently, you're involved in a meleches kilkul. You're not adding something to the universe. You're subtracting something. But the answer is, it all depends on what's in his mind. He can make these melechas into a meleches machshavas. His thought pattern and his intention, his purpose, is going to elevate a meleches kilkul and transform it into meleches tikkun. So let's go through the four cases. In case number one, korea, his interest is to rip these zigzag stitches in order to stitch it up in a better way. In the case of mochek, he wants to remove two letters so that he can put the right two letters in place of the wrong two letters. In the case of Soser, he wants to build a better structure. You know, there's a little old churva, you know, some sort of budka that he wants to get rid of, and he wants to replace it with a structure. And in the case of Mechaber, he extinguishes the coal, the charcoal, because he wants to use that charcoal for another campfire. That's called pechon. But the bottom line is that what's common to all these four cases is that the machshava, the person's thought, is going to impact on the malacha and basically make it into a malacha. Because in the absence of that positive thinking, it becomes a meleches kilkul. Okay then? So it's really fascinating. You know, if I was a darshan here, I can give you a whole hour's drush on this. You know, how something could be converted from destructive to constructive if you have the right intention. Yeah.
It's the absence of thought, those four things, that make it kilkul. If he rips his garment because he's angry, it's because he's not thinking.
Yeah, I guess you could say the following. That's what Tzvi is pointing out. What happens if he has no thought in his brain? Yeah, he's just jughead. He's not thinking one way or the other. And the answer is that since the malacha in and of itself is destructive, he would be potter. We need a positive kavana that he has to add, because the absence of that kavana leaves me cold. It leaves me in the state of kilkul. I need that positive kavana that he has a scheme and he has a goal and he has a purpose. That's what transforms it into a malacha. You know, it's a little bit reminiscent of what we spoke about once. So you remember the Tosus read about Chofer Guma. That Chofer Guma, when you dig a hole, that's not a malacha. There's no malacha called Chofer Guma on the list of 39. But your machshava to create a planting, a possibility of planting, that's what makes it into a meleches chorish. Because charisha is the precursor of zriya, of planting. Okay, now we get to the main crux, or is such a word, crux?
Yeah.
The crux of what we want to discuss today. And it's interesting, he says that even though different prophets usually have their own style, even if they're saying more or less the same thing, he says that there are three of the great achronim, you know, the giants of the last, let's say, two, three centuries, that came up with the same question and the same idea, almost in the same style. And we'll list them as we go along, but first, on the list is the Minchas Chinuch. and he wants to know what's the din in a case where a person does a malach on Shabbos, and he's not talking about those four malachas that belong to that separate group, any malacha. We'll talk about Zoreya, talk about Mavashil. He has intention of planting and growing something. He has intention of cooking something. The problem is that the produce of his planting and the final result of his cooking are what we call Isurei Hano, right? So that's a category. I'll just mention it here. Isurei Hano.
That's in the category of Muktzeh?
No. This has nothing to do with Muktzeh. Let me explain to you what this has to do. Okay? We're talking about Zorea Kilayim, or we're talking about Mevashel Basar Bechol. Okay? Henceforth, Beis Ches. Okay? And this is all called Isurei Hano. Right? Now, in general, the halacha makes the following fundamental distinction. There's something called Isurei Achila, things that you're not allowed to eat. And then there's Isurei Hano. Isurei Hano means I cannot get any benefit. I can't feed it to my dog. I can't give it to my non-Jewish neighbor as a gift. I can't get any benefit whatsoever. Basically, just burn it. Destroy it. Now, what's happening in the Minchas Chinuch is that the man is planting two seeds from two different species together. But Mapolis Yad means he has them all, both in his hand, throws them into the hole in the ground, and then it takes root and it produces. Now, normally Zorea is a great tikkun. It's something very contributes greatly, because that's how I produce an entire tree. You know, I can produce so much grains and fruits and whatnot. Here, it's going to grow, it's going to take, but what it produces is called kelayim, and it's also about, no, I'm not allowed to benefit, according to the halacha, from anything that's produced. No benefit whatsoever. Or, for example, in the case of cooking meat and milk together, which, by the way, itself is an avera, but he did it on Shabbos, so now he has a double avera. In addition to cooking meat and milk together, he also violates Melechas Bishol on Shabbos. The only thing is that we have a rule that certainly applies to Zorea and to Mavashel, that you only have if it's a Melechas Tikkun, right? Melechas Tikkun, Melechas Machshavas. Here in this case, one could ostensibly argue, and then we'll counter argue against this, that this is called a kilkul, because what benefit do you get out of it? Well, you might want to have benefit from it, but the halacha enjoins you from having benefit out of it. And this is the analytic question of the Minchas Chinuch. How do we define kilkul versus tikkun? Do we look at it in halachic legal terms, or do we look at it in subjective goal terms? From his subjective goal, you know, right now he's not interested in observing the law. You know, he just wants to produce, and he thinks he's going to produce some great stuff by mixing these species. He thinks he's got himself a cheeseburger, you know, what's the name of that famous McDonald's, right? McDonald's, they'll hire him as the chef. You know, he's a great cook. You know, boss of a chala. I always wondered what it would taste like. Never got a chance to taste it. I used to walk on Shabbos past McDonald's every Shabbos in Queens, New York, in order to get to the shul. So after a while, I said, the smell is too good, I got to cross the street, because you don't have any anor from Boston Cold. I have a student who bought into a franchise of Dunkin' Donuts in Cleveland, Ohio, or somewhere in Ohio. He's from Cleveland, but in one of the cities in Ohio. And the issue was that he was getting benefit. Dunkin' Donuts, in certain branches, they actually have non-kosher food, you know, meat. You know, so the question is, since he's now the owner of that branch and the monies are coming in, he might be in violation of getting anor from Basar B'Cholov. This question comes up in cooking classes. You know, you join a cooking class in a non-Jewish college, and what happens? Inevitably, you cook Basar B'Cholov together, and the cooking itself is prohibited. Let alone the anor that you get a good grade A, and they call you the chef of the year because you cook Basar B'Cholov. You know, so there are a lot of issues over here. But in terms of Shabbos, it's a fascinating question. Let's see it inside. I want you to highlight, you have the photocopy, so I can't underline, this is not my book, but you can underline in the photocopy. I don't know where Harvey is today. Okay. So that I would like you to underline on the bottom of page 185, you'll see the following. He says, three lines up from the bottom, Shebisofo shel davar lo haya nitan lehenos mimalacha hazu, which literally means at the end of the day, he's not permitted to get any benefit from this malacha at all, period. The Torah prohibits him. So how do we look at this? Do we say, well, the malacha per se on a biological, physical level is certainly a tikkun. You know, the reality is that he's got a very tasty bus of b'cholif. He's got great kelayim. You know, it's really valuable, so to speak. But on the other hand, there's a halachic prohibition that forms a barrier and doesn't allow him to implement any sort of benefit whatsoever. So that's right, that's called Hakofa Aleph. Now we go on to Hakofa Beis. You remember there were three Achronim here. The second one is Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. I'm not sure why he adds this whole thing over here. Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh L'Brach. I don't know. Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, as far as I know, if I remember my history, was not murdered by the anti-Semites, you know. He had trouble from Jews, Dafka, because he was accused of being a Shabtai Tzvi follower. He wasn't, but there was a false libel because he wore a kamiya around his neck, so they thought he was a follower of Shabtai Tzvi.
Rabbi Berzon, did we get to any conclusion from the question of the Minchachia? We just said the question.
We're going to get back to that. That's going to be on 185. Right now, we're presenting the issue in three different hakafas. Okay, second hakafa, the same issue. This is in Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, and he talks about a case of, wait, how is this different? Just one second. It's also Kilayim. Last night I saw it was a different question. Just one second. I just want to see if it's a different question. It's an identical question. One second. Yeah, in Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, he took a chita and a saora. Okay, this is a violation again of kelayim. He took wheat and barley in one handful and planted them together. Now, the only thing that I see that Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz adds to the question of the Minchas Chinuch, otherwise again it's just a repeat, is that he proves the Isra HaNon Kelayim from Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. In Torah Shebichsav it says Pen Tikdash HaMaleah, and that's a pasuk in Parshas Ki Teitze. The word Tikdash, which is a conjugation of the noun Kedusha, sanctity, means paradoxically the exact opposite of sanctity. You know, basically what Kedusha means is stay away from it. I mean, that's a long discussion, not for us now. But the Torah is saying that when you plant, in this case, wheat and barley together in one planting, then it becomes Asur Ba'anah. That's what the Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, he quotes it, says that you have to take the kelayim and basically burn it. So all you have here is, by producing this kelayim, is some beautiful vegetation, but on a halachic level, the only thing you have to do with this vegetation is burn it. And therefore, in that sense, he hasn't added anything to the world. He's left with a kilkum. And this again is the vacillation of Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz. The third, Hakofa Gimel, of these Achronim who again vacillated on the same issue, is the Nodav Yehuda. The Nodav Yehuda was a great Ashkenazic genius who lived about three centuries ago, and he wrote a pirush on the Shas called the Tzlach, and he addresses the case of Baso B'cholof. So again, we have here basically three Achronim who are all saying the same thing. They don't know, they vacillate back and forth, what's the status of creating something physical which might be a very beautiful addition to the world, but it's something that the halacha requires of you to get rid of. Now, that's all from the earlier achron, meaning from 2 centuries ago, 3 centuries ago. In our time, we have a writer, an author, who writes responsa literature. His name is the Minchas Yitzchak. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He died. He was the head of the Beis Din in England, and then eventually he headed up the Badatz of the Eidah Haredis here in Yerushalayim. And he too relates this question, but he adds a very sharp point. Now, in order to understand this paragraph, which is on the bottom of page 186, where he writes, Gam HaBeis Yitzchak. So I have to introduce this with a concept which you may or may not be familiar with, which is called Maisa Shabbos. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Maisa Shabbos means if a person went ahead and violated the Shabbos, either intentionally or unintentionally, all sorts of different permutations here, different dinim, and as a result he produced something. So the law requires that you, let's say for example, he cooked something on Shabbos, that we stay away from that. We don't eat the tavshil. That's called Maisa Shabbos. Now, amongst the Tannaim, there are many, many different shittas about Maisa Shabbos. Again, it depends on Mezid and Shogeg. Is it only also to the person who violated the Malach? Is it also to others? Many, many different issues. It's a sugya unto itself. But, of all the different Tannaim, the one who's most machmir, who takes this to its most severe, stringent conclusion, is Rabbi Yochanan HaSanwar, okay? And he's of the opinion that Maisa Shabbos is Osir Vanah. And that's for everybody. So Reuven cooked a tavshil on Shabbos. That tavshil is Osir Vanah. You can get absolutely no benefit from it from now till the end of time. And that applies to everyone. No one is allowed. It basically, according to Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, Maisa Shabbos generates what we call a Chefta di Isura. Chefta di Isura is a lingo, a terminology that's used in Shas to indicate that something is also inherently. Inherently means it's not just some sort of like chametz. It's hard to call chametz a Chefta di Isura because after Pesach, the chametz is mutter.
Well, the comments that was created on Pesach, I mean, we
right, so that becomes an issue. But primarily, it comes out according to the analysis of the Minchas Yitzchak. This is a fascinating analysis. If we accept Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, then you should never be chayav for cooking on Shabbos. You got to take it out of the list of 39 malachas. Why? Because it's always makalka. Why is it always mekalkel? Because as a result of the cooking is also by no. Because if we go quick to that side, that the Isra Adno converts a tikkun into a kilkul, then according to Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, you can never be chai from Malachas Bishul. Because it's always going to be mekalkel by definition.
He's still out there one of the Asurat
of Shabbos, which is... No, maybe it's a Drabbanon, you know, a Malacha, which is kilkul, right. Is only also Drabbanon, but...
Who will kill for
Kula mi derabba mine. Maybe it's an Isra deraita of Baal Tashchis, and now...
Again, forget about Baltashis for a minute. What we're asking Shmuel is that what's common to all 39 malachas is that if you violate them intentionally, you get skila for that. You get dropped off a high cliff. You know what I'm saying? It's not pleasant. And the question is, how could you ever get skila for malachas bishul if you're telling me it's a malachas kilkul? Call of a kalkul and
p'turim.
That's interesting. Can a guy eat it? Alright. So the truth is, a guy could eat it, but only on his own initiative. I can't give it to the guy. In other words, the underlying premise of all the hakafas that we made, whether it's the Minchas Chinuch, whether it's the Yonis and Ivishitz, whether it's the Minchas Yitzchak, what's common to all of them is that Once something is osur ba'anah, the Torah says you have to burn it. If the guy jumps ahead and grabs it before you get a chance to do it, and he eats it, he gets hanah, so he benefited from the malacha. But you got no benefit from the malacha. The guy doesn't owe you anything. If the guy owes you something because you winked to him and said, hey, you know, I just cooked some very very good cheeseburger, then you violated the isur hanah. Because once something is bas mecholav, you can't even give it to a guy as a gift. That's also considered hanah. So what Tzvi says, what happens if the guy decides to benefit from your bishul or from your kalayim? That's his business. You know, if he grabs it before you get to burn it in smoke. But you can't get any benefit from that. So as far as what you accomplish in this world, it is totally prohibited in hanah. And here the Minchas Yisroch is adding, then paradoxically you can never be chai for bishul. Because by definition, bishul is always a kilkul because of Maisa Shabbos, which generates an Isra Hanah for me, for every other Jew. We owe him. Now, if the guy grabs it, that's his business. You know, if he gets there before I get to do away with it, that's a different story. But I didn't get any benefit from it. So as far as my malach is concerned, if you look at it legally, the amount of benefit I got reaches the very high number of zero. That's about it. Zippo. Now, we're getting back to Shmuel, the Minchas Chinuch, which we started with, and now the Minchas Chinuch is going to try to analyze this question and take it to the next step. This you'll see on the bottom of your page 186, going on to the top of page 187. And the Minchas Chinuch wants to establish, and then he's going to ask himself a big, big kasha, that this is not called a kilkul. The kilkul versus tikkun depends upon the physical reality, not on the legal reality, not on the halachic reality. And if we come to determine and evaluate a particular malach, whether it's a kilkul or a tikkun, if that's our issue, then the barometer, the determining evaluation, is the physical heftza, the object itself, from the perspective of mitzius. If the object was improved, then that's called tikkun. And you could underline the last three words on the page here. Beli kol kesher, going on to 187, ledinim shelo. So this is the final conclusion of the Minchas Chinuch. And if... just one second. Right. Now, Tzvi, this, I'm not sure if maybe what you said we can fit into what he's saying. I don't think that's what you meant, but let's say you did mean it. He's saying like this: if I want to know whether there's a tikkun or not as a result of my zriya, my bishul, etc., I invite a guy and I ask the guy this question. He's like the objective bystander. He's the judge that's going to tell me.
Arama kfela.
Yeah, like a kfela. He's going to determine as to whether or not things were improved. And he's going to tell you, wow, you know, your cooking is fine. It smells great. You know, I really love this. So he's going to tell you, wow, you know, this, I never thought, he says, you know, that you combine wheat and barley and it tastes so good. So he's being used here just as a litmus test to determine the mitzvahs. Is the reality such that there's an improvement? It doesn't mean that I'm allowed to feed him and let him benefit from it. That I can't do, because again, Isuri, I know you're not allowed to even give to your friend the God. So anyway, the bottom line is that the Minchas Chinuch comes to a definite conclusion that tikkun is determined by the physical reality. If it went up in value, if it's improved, that's called tikkun. Forget about dinim. I'm not interested in whether halachically you're allowed to benefit from it or you're not allowed to benefit from. But at this point, and this is fascinating, the Minchas Chinuch has a kasha on himself. Here's what I call intellectual honesty. And he has a sugya psachim on daf ayin gimel amid aleph. And it's very interesting, you know, the part of the Ramban that we didn't finish is, to a large extent, built on that sugya in psachim. And the sugya in psachim deals with cases that we mentioned in the past where he shechts a korban pesach and he had the wrong machshov in mind. He had in mind that no one would eat the korban pesach, or he shechted a korban ola and he had in mind that it should become a korban pesach and it's not roy to become a korban pesach. And even though normally shechting a Korban Pesach would be Doche Shabbos, it overrides the Shabbos, but that's only if it's a kosher v'yosha shechita, and it creates a Korban Pesach. So for the sake of creating a Korban Pesach, which is valid, you can violate the Shabbos. But if at the end of the day you did it in a way that it's possible, and it's invalid, it cannot be used, it cannot qualify for Korban Pesach, then you violated Shabbos. Now, in the course of that broader sugya, and here I want you to underline in the big paragraph that says Mamshich on page 187, if you can underline the second, towards the end of the second line, Adam, you have this Adam Sheshachat B'Shabbos L'Avodah Zarah? Okay. So what does the Gemara talk about? You remember that we had a long discussion about the sakin, you know, the knife that was used in an idolatrous worship cult, and that becomes Isurei Anah, and then he went ahead and he used that knife for Shechita. And you may recall that we said that that's okay. He's not considered benefiting from the knife because as a result of the Shechita, the animal goes down in value. The live animal on the market is worth 1,000. Now its meat after Shechita is only worth 100. And that's called Makalkel, that means there's no Hanah here. He depreciates the value rather than appreciate the value. Now, a person shechts on Shabbos an animal to an idol as part of an idolatrous worship. Now, what happens to the meat halakhically? Are you allowed to benefit from it?
Should be Osir Le'olam.
Correct. It's Osir for sure, Midoraisa, Le'olam, for everybody, because it was shechted for the sake of Avodah Zorah. Is he Chaya for Shabbos? And the Gemara says, to our surprise, that he's Chaya for Shabbos. Now that sounds like it's a support for the Minchas Chinuch, right? That even though you're enjoined from eating the meat and benefiting from the meat because it was an Avodah Zorah Isur, but nevertheless you're Chayav for Shabbos. That would seem to indicate that we completely discount the dinim, right, the halachic status of Isur Hanah. But oddly enough, that Gemara is going to be lead us to the exact opposite conclusion. It's going to be not a support proof for the Minchas Chinuch conclusion, but a kasha and a slug up of the Minchas Chinuch. Why? Because the Gemara asks the following question, and here you want to skip down about 5 lines and underline Hadisanya. You may find that. And the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Ashochet Chatos B'Shabbos Bachutz L'Avodah Zorah Chayav Aleh Gimel Chatos. So here's a case of an overlap of 3 different severe violations. With one little incision in an animal's neck, he violates 3 major prohibitions. Number 1, he violates Shabbos. Number 2, he did it for the sake of Avodah Zorah. And number 3, it happened to be that this animal was a Behemas Kodshim, which you're not allowed to shecht outside the Azorah, and he did it outside the Azorah. So the Braisa establishes that he's chayav to bring 3 chatos. Now, by the way, just parenthetically, shechita doesn't require a great deal of effort. All you have to do is one little incision in which you cut the 2 simonim, that's the trachea and the esophagus, I think it's called, or the kana and the veshet. So imagine, the man violated 3 of the most hideous crimes, 2 of which are capital crimes, the 3rd is a chiyuv kares, which is also not an easy matter, and he's chayav 3 chatos. Chatos means he did it b'shogeg. Okay, this is a typical Talmudic Gemara, you know, where the Gemara tells you how you can do one little thing and be chayav so many different averus. So the Gemara asks the following question: my tiken, you want to tell me that he's chayav for Shabbos? That's one of the 3 chatos. Where's the takana? And the premise of the Gemara's kasha seems to be antithetical to the Minchas Chinuch, because Minchas Chinuch says, forget about the laws, I just want to look at the mitzvah. So what's Gemara objecting? My tike. Well, maybe the Gemara's answer is going to support the Minchas Chinuch. And the Gemara's going to answer, well, you know, the tikkun is because the mitzvahs, now the animal is slaughtered, you know, eat its meat and so forth and so on, or the meat is theoretically edible. No, that's not the Gemara's answer.
You're not allowed to eat anything that was intended for a korban, even if it's shechted outside.
Right. So again, halachically, there are three different reasons why he's not allowed to eat this meat. One is because it's shkutei chutz. Number two, it's because it's shkutei avodah zarah. Number three, it's ma'aseh shabbos. He violated the shabbos. So there's no question that he's not allowed to eat it. Correct? And that's all legally. Legally binding. He's not allowed to eat it. And yet, the Gemara says, my tikkun. What kind of takon is it? Meaning, if you're not allowed to eat it, according to the law, then it's not called a takon. This is antithetical to the Minchas Chinuch, but we're holding out for the Gemara's answer to this question. Why do you chayev? Why is it considered a tikkun? Omar avavia, shemotzio midei evra menachai. You may remember this. Rabbeinu Tam, I think, in the Tosis that we saw, quoted this, that before you shechted it, it was a live being, and the flesh of a live being is prohibited. You're not allowed to take a limb out of a live animal and eat it. Okay? And after he shechts it, he removes the Isur Eiv Menachai. Now, this is paradoxical. What do you mean he removes the Isur Eiv Menachai? He's not allowed to eat it on the three different Isurim.
It's dead in the first place. How do you remove something that's not... How do you call it Eiv Menachai when it's dead?
No, what we're saying is that as a result of the Shechita, he removes the Isur Eiv Menachai. So, I'm just pointing out that at this point, the Gemara is almost hilarious here. So I would almost laugh at this. Well, who are you fooling over here? You're telling me that you removed the Isur Eiv Menachai. Shkoyah. So that makes it into a tikkun? What benefit do I get from removing the Isur of Eiv Menachai? After all, it's also Mitoras Avodah Zarah. It's also Mitoras Ma'aseh Shabbos. It's also Mitoras Shechut Eichut. So you're telling me, yeah, well, we remove the Isur Eiv Menachai. That's a great accomplishment. Yeah,
it's not a goy can.
Even a goy can't eat.
So that's Rashi's shot over here. Rashi says the following: what did the Gemara have in mind when it said Motzio Midei Eiv Menachai? So Rashi says Libnei Noach Shim Achlo Eino Nera. Now, Rabosai, if I don't know if anybody here learns Daf Yomi, but if you do, then this is a sugya in Masechet Sanhedrin, which they're learning these days in Daf Yomi. And the question is, what's the status of Avram and Achai for Ben Noach? Ostensibly, one of the seven mitzvahs that apply to a Ben Noach is Avram and Achai. And again, I wouldn't suggest, David, that you go out and fight the battle and try to convince them that they shouldn't be eating Eiv Menachai. In fact, whenever I'm in Orlando, I always wonder, you remember those big turkey pulkas that they're eating? Have you ever been to Disney World?
Yeah,
no?
They have those.
I mean, you can't walk five feet without seeing, they have these pulkies, I don't know what you call it in English, drumsticks, right? And it's about this size, you know? And every other person on the street is walking, somebody's making a lot of money over there. So I was always wondering if those drumsticks were Eiv Menachai.
I think today you would go against animal rights.
Oh, okay, I don't know about animal rights. But. Okay, so let's get back to the Gemara. In any event, the Gemara says that why is this Shechita considered a Meleches Tikkun? Right? Why is this considered a Meleches Tikkun? And the Gemara answers, because halachically, it now becomes mutter to a guy. Again, for a Jew, you've removed the Isur Eiv Menachai, Shkoyach, but that doesn't really help me much, because there are still many, many very serious, severe Isurim. I can't benefit from the fact that I removed the Isur Eiv Menachai. But it seems that the Gemara is analyzing the question of Tikkun versus Kilkul from the perspective of legality. Nothing changed here in the Gemara's Havamin or the Gemara's answer, the answer as far as the Mitzias is concerned. The Mitzias, the reality is the same reality. What changed here is the legal status. He says, Hare Shebe Emes Lo Hoyakan Kol Tikkun Ela Kilkul. In effect, the Gemara's premise is that since an animal is worth a lot more during its lifetime than it is after you kill it, after you slaughter it in this case, it depreciates in value. That makes it into a meleches kilkul. And yet the Gemara turns around and says, no, it's not a kilkul, it's a tikkun. Because at least as far as Eivah Min Achai is concerned, you remove the Iser Eivah Min Achai. Says the Minchas Chinuch, it seems clear from the Gemara, from the whole sugya, whether it's the question of the Makshan or the answer of Rav Avira, that the determining factor here as to whether or not it's something is called a kilkul or not a kilkul is its halachic status, its din. Right? The name of our sugya today is kilkul dini, meaning if it's asur, then it should be a kilkul. And that's what the Gemara asks in its question, my tikkun, it's awesome. And the Gemara answers, no, there's a legal benefit here because we move the Iser Eivah Min Achai. Who cares if we move the Iser Eivah Min Achai? Because if a guy now eats the meat, he's not going to be put to death for violating one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, namely Eivah Min Achai.
Can a Jewish Beis Din actually have the power to put a guy to
death? So for that you have to join the Daf Yomi program. Yeah. But my only point is that what does the Minchas Chinuch see in this Gemara, in Masechet Pesachim? What he sees, which you and I may not have seen, you know, we have to look at it through his perspective, is that the Gemara's analysis here of whether it's tikkun, as the Gemara thinks, in the Maskana, or it's kilkul, as the Gemara thought in the Havamim, in the question, this all hinges on the legal status. The Gemara thought in the Havamim that this is not a tikkun at all, because for three different reasons you can't benefit. The law prevents you and joins you from benefiting from this shechita. And the Gemara's answer is no, but there is a benefit. Again, why that benefit of Eivah Min Achai is sufficient, the heter of Eivah Min Achai is sufficient to make it into a meleches tikkun, I'm baffled by that. But irrelevant to that, insofar as the determining factor is concerned, for kilkul versus tikkun, the criterion seems to be the halachic status. And therefore, if you take a look at the paragraph that starts Me'a Gemara Kan, the Minchas Chinuch says, Mashva, we derive from this Gemara that if you want to know whether it's a tikkun or a kilkul, and the answer is, it all depends upon the halachic status of Shechita. If Shechita can remove an Isur, for example, i.e. Eivah Min Achai in this case, then even though we get no benefit from it, the guy maybe gets benefit, but that's a legal change, and a change in status of a heter, removing the Isur Eivah Min Achai, that's enough to make it into a meleches tikkun. And the flip side is that if we didn't know about the Iser Eivah Min Achai being removed by Shechita, in the Havamina where we looked at the overall picture of how many different Isurim are engendered by the Shechita, we came to the conclusion certainly it's a Meleches Kilkul. But all of the considerations back and forth, weighing it this way and weighing it that way, all hinge on the legal status of the Shechita and the Basar as a result of the Shechita. Now again, as we said before, the Minchas Chinuch is committed to the final conclusion that tikkun versus kilkul is not relevant to dinin. And it's not the halachic status that determines. If the metzius it's a tikkun, then it's a tikkun, even if it's asur ba'no, like kelayim, or like the case of basar b'cholov. So what is the Minchas Chinuch going to do with this Gemara in Masechta Pesachim? So for this, we want to turn to page 188.
What's the name of the Rabbi?
Weinberg, I think this is
Weinberg?
The name. Weinberg. Okay, then. All right. Well, have you seen it?
No.
Oh.
Is he Litvish or is he more Hasidic?
In his thinking, he's very Litvish. In his Hasidus, he's a Hasidus Rebbe. Very interesting combination. But I'm trying to, you know, there's so much depth here. If I get distracted, which it's always my fault that I get distracted, I start schmoozing about this and that. But let's try to see if we can, you know, force ourselves on Erev. It's almost Erev Yom Kippur to think pure Torah thoughts. Okay.
Where are we, the second paragraph?
188.
Second paragraph?
I'm not sure. That's a good question, Don. I'm looking over the first paragraph to see, to make sure that we don't miss anything important. Okay. Oh, in the first paragraph on the page, which again starts on the previous page, he says the following, that when we analyze this issue of a kilkul based on the law, whether or not the law could set up a malach as kilkul, or rather the metzias determines whether it's a kilkul, we must limit our discussion to 35 out of 39 malachs. Meaning we have to divide up the unit which we call Melech HaShabbos, which is made up of 39 members, we have to divide up into two groups. We'll call it Group A and Group B. There are four members of Group B. Group A are malachos that by their very nature are creative. They are tikkun. They can become kilkul under certain unusual circumstances. The second group, which we call Group B, which is made up of those four malachos that we discussed earlier, those are malachos which, as a general rule, if all things are equal, are maleches kilkul. You have to make them into a maleches tikkun. Now, if you notice, in all the hakafos that we had, and we discussed about Bishul, we discussed about Zorea, which group were we discussing? A or B? If A is the 35 malachas that are creative by their very nature, except for exceptional cases, then Bishul and Zorea, cooking and planting, belongs to Group A. The Gemara in Pesachim, on the other hand, is talking about Shechita. Where would you classify Shechita? It belongs to Group B. And now we have to add another Malacha to Group B. Now there are only, we mentioned four Malachas in Group B. Now we have to add a fifth, which means that there are only 34 members of Group A and five members of Group B. Now what is this Malacha called in the language of the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Gimel that lists all the Malachas? Shochet. We have other names for it. We call it Netilas Neshama, we call it Chabura, we call it Chovel. These are all synonymous terms. They all belong to one and the same Malacha. That Malacha, by its very nature, is Kilkul. Why? Because again, let's just review. The animal during its lifetime is worth 1,000. With the Shechita and the death of the animal, its Basar is worth 100. So when it depreciated by 90% of its value, that makes it into a maleches kilkul. And we have to now rack our brains and figure out what kavana, what intention can transform this malacha from a kilkul into a tikkun. Just as we said, and again I'm not going to go through all the examples, but in Korea he rips these stitches that are falling apart in order to re-sew it in a more strong way, beneficial. That makes it into tikkun. That was his kavana, that was his intention. So too in the case of netilas neshama, of shochet, where he kills the animal, we have to figure out how do we through his kavana, how do we make this into a maleches tikkun? Okay? Are you with me so far? So he says the following. Avo meleches shochet. This is on line 5 from the top. Bi etzem hamalach yesh kilkul gadol. If we isolate the shechita itself, we would have to give it a thumbs down, a very bad grade. In the scale between tikkun on top and kilkul on the bottom, it belongs kilkul gadol, all the way in the bottom, because during its lifetime it's worth a lot more than after you shecht it. Oh. He says the following. It's not like the cases of Mevashel and Zorea. there, the malachas themselves are maleches tikkun. By their very nature, by their very essence, they are creative. You cook something that wasn't edible raw. You plant something, and hopefully, if it grows, if it catches, it grows, and so forth and so on. If it takes, it grows. In the case of Netilas Neshama, he says, which is Shochet, we have to rack our brains and come up with an answer to the following question. Why and when am I chayef for Netilas Neshama? What makes Shechita into a tikkun? And the answer is that because of the very unique nature of this malacha, that it belongs to that minority group, the silent minority, he says the only way that you can tell me that this Shechita is a tikkun is by its halachic status, its legal status. What is the legal status of Shechita? How would you describe Shechita with one word of four letters that is, gives it a legal status as a tikkun? Okay?
Mashallah.
It's a matir. Matir.
Mashallah is forward.
It's a matir. What's a matir? A matir means a legal action which transforms something that's prohibited into something that's permitted. A matir is, I'll give you an example. If you haven't done it yet, Erev Rosh Hashanah, then do it today or tomorrow. It's called Hataras Nedarim, right? Hataras Nedarim is a classical case of a matir. I had a neder, and it enjoined me, it prohibited me from eating this piece of bread. And now I was matir the neder. That's called Hataras Nedarim. That's a matir. In the case of meat, in case of an animal, there's an iser of Aver Menachai, and now I have to do a matir. What's going to be the matir? Shechita. We don't have time to discuss this, but Shechita is a matir for many, many different reasons. For example, if an animal dies without Shechita, it's called what?
Nevela.
And that's awesome. And the Shechita is going to be matir, the iser Nevela. So the Shechita, by its very nature, as a halachic act, is classified as a matir. What makes Netilas Neshama on Shabbos into a tikkun, when actually the animal is worth a fraction of what it was worth alive, and therefore it should be a kilkul? The answer is the legal dimension and essence of Shechita is what makes it into a tikkun. Because legally, what is Shechita? In abstract terms, it's a matir. Shechita, in abstract terms, legally, is a matir. Do you follow what I mean by legally? According to the world of halacha, shechita becomes a tikkun only because it's a matir. And the premise is that if I have an opportunity to remove an isur, that's a tikkun, because I'm enjoined from doing this. You see, in the case of Eitz Hadas, there was no matir. God didn't allow any sort of heter. So that's not a good example of a matir, but in many, many different isurim, we have a matir. In the case of Maaser Sheni, if you bring it to Yerushalayim, that's a matir. In the case of Chametz, the passage of time is a matir. In the case of
Bris Mila,
I don't know if there's any isur before Bris Mila. Bris Mila is just a kiyum. What I'm talking about, what do you say?
Bris Mila on Shabbat.
Well, no, what I'm talking is that there's an Isur and I do an action and that action removes that Isur. So you might say that an Orel is not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash or Yid Kodshim, so then maybe Mila is a Matir. I don't know. That's something to think about. It's a good point. But all I'm saying is that there are actions which are a Matir. In marriage, what would be a classical act which is a Matir? No? Well, yeah, that's pretty sophisticated.
Yes.
You're right, but that's not what I meant. The classical matir in marriage is a get, right? We don't believe in Catholic marriage, so we have something called a matir, which is a get. Now, whether Misas Habal, when he dies, that's a matir, I don't know. That's an interesting question. Very profound question, by the way, because Rebbe Elchanan wants to know, after Tchias HaMesim, is she married to the first husband or the second husband? You know, that all depends how you define Misa, if Misa is a matir or not. But anyway, getting back to our question, so now you mentioned Chuppah v'Kiddushin. That's very sophisticated, and that depends upon the status of a pnuyo, whether she comes under kedesha or it's just a bittul essay. I don't know. For that you have to know Eben Ezra very well. But certainly get would be a classical matir. Shchita is a classical matir because before the shchita, the animal is asur. There's an iser eivir menachai. Many other isurim, but certainly an iser eivir menachai. So now the Gemara is in a bind. The Gemara is absolutely confused about this particular case of shchita. He shechted on Shabbos for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, and it was behemoth kodshim, and he shechted it outside the Azorah. Basically, this shchita is what?
Total kilkul.
Well, before you get to the word kilkul, right, what would be the opposite of a matir?
An oser.
It's an oser, exactly. This shchita, this particular case, paradoxically, is an oser. And the Gemara says if what makes shchita, what elevates shchita to the level of a tikkun is a matir, this shchita is an oser. This shchita engenders three different isurim that didn't exist before the maisa shchita. So now I'm in trouble. If my equation, my tautology is that a matir equals tikkun on Shabbos, and therefore shchita is considered a tikkun because shchita is a matir, if you follow that logic, then in this particular set of circumstances, the shchita is an oser, and therefore it's a kilkul. So the Gemara asks, my tikkun? And the Gemara gives a very fascinating answer, which boggles the mind. And the Gemara says, you're right, it's an oser, but at the same time, it's also a matir. And in Hilchos Tikkun, shchita becomes a matir, even if the overall picture is kind of sad. You know, he's generating a lot more isurim than heterim, but at least vis-a-vis one heter, shchita, even in this circumstances, is in fact a matir, and that the Gemara claims, which we have to analyze, is enough to make it into a Meleches Tikkun. But wait a second. This has nothing to do with the Minchas Chinuch. Let's clarify that. The Minchas Chinuch and all those who followed in his footsteps, all those prophets who prophesied with the same style, Rabbi Yonasan Ivershitz and the Minchas Yitzchak, and who else was on the list that I leave somebody out, and the Nodav Yehuda, they were all talking about the other group, the group that we now know has only 34 members to it, namely a Malacha which, like Zoreya, like Mavashal, is inherently a tikkun. Here's where the Minchas Chinuch drew the line and came to the bottom conclusion that even though if it's Kelayim or Bas B'chol, it creates an Iser, that's irrelevant to us. Because all I need in order to make this Malacha into a Malacha is to establish that B'mitzias, he added something to this universe on a physical level. And that's true both in the case of Zriyas Kelayim and in the case of Bishul Basa B'chalav. On a physical level, he created something. I don't have to go beyond that. At this point, says Minchas Chinuch, the halachic considerations, the legal considerations, are totally irrelevant. Don't even bother with them. But I admit to you, based on the Sugyim Pesach, and he has no choice, that in the case of Shechita, insofar as Shechita inherently, on a biological level, on a mitzias, in terms of the market value of the basar, is a kilkul. Here, I can only tell you that shchita is a tikkun because of its nature in a legal world as a matir. And the Gemara vacillates, what happens if you have a shchita which is both an oser and a matir? It's an oser, b'torah shchutei chutz, b'torah samod zora, b'torah maisa shabbos, but it's a matir, b'torah eivir menachai. And how do I balance all that? That's what the Shakel of Ataria, the discourse, is all about in the Gemara. And therefore he summarizes this in the paragraph Yotze Eifo, which you'll see towards the bottom of your page. Sheklal ze shekilkul dini lav shmei kilkul lo tamid nachon. Even though the Minchas Chinuch establishes that the halachic legal kilkul is not relevant, well, that's generally true, but there are exceptions to the rule. Hu nachon, the rule of thumb of the Minchas Chinuch is correct with regard to group A, those are the malachos that b'mahutam. How do you translate b'mahutam? In their essence, excellent. Nechshavos kimalachos shel tikkun, like, for example, in our discussion is Orea and Mavashil, but Ilu, but in the second group, Malacha Shebimahusan Hein Malacha Shel Kilkul Kamo Shochet, there we can convert them into a Maleches Tikun based on the halachic benefit that I get from it. And Rabosai, what am I thinking about now? Can anybody read my mind?
I mean, the Kavana can transform A to Z and Z to R in both directions. If my Kavana can transfer Kilkul into a Tikun, if you translate Tikun into a Kilkul, or maybe that's not what you're thinking. But that's what I was thinking of yesterday in Kavuto.
So I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. You'll have to repeat it one more time. What I was thinking of was Mila. How do you define Mila? Is Mila a Tikun or a Kilkul? So you remember we had a long discussion about the fact that the Rachanimol is a Chole and a Nechbal, right? But on the other hand, there's a Kiyuma Mitzvah here. You know, that's a legal principle. So I was wondering if perhaps, in the case of Mila, the whole discussion about whether that's called Tikun or not called Tikun, can I derive from Mila that Chovel B'Chavura, that, excuse me, Mekalkil B'Chavura is Chayav, because the Torah says you're not allowed to do Mila, and yet it's a Kilkul, because the Nechbal, the whole Ramban that we discussed yesterday, is a Chole. Or do we say no? Since essentially the act of circumcision as a surgical operation is a Kilkul, because the child is going to suffer as a result. Okay, it's good that Dr. Joel's not here today. He gets very upset when I say that. But so it's a Kilkul. So now how do I make it into a Moleches Tikun? And the answer might be, according to one view, and this could be Rabbi Yehuda's view against Rabbi Shimon, that the very fact that I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of Hashem and I'm legally required to do this mila, that itself makes it into a tikkun. So again, because we have a situation very similar to Shechita, where it, you know, I must introduce the legal element here if I want to salvage a maleches tikkun out of something which is inherently a kilkul, and if I can introduce that legal dimension here, like in Shechita the Matir, as far as Avram and Achai, in the case of Mila, the mitzvah of Mila introduces that legal dimension that might convert Mila, which in and of itself should be classified essentially as Kilkul, into Maleches Tikkun. And now I'm going to ask you, Ben, to repeat what you said, well, because my brain wasn't ready for it, you know.
I think we learned yesterday that the Kavan, even though the Tinoch is considered Nichbal and Chola, that was not the intention of the Moel.
Oh, as far as Vlach HaTzrich HaLegufa is concerned, yeah. Since the Moel needs the mitzvah, it becomes Vlach HaTzrich HaLegufa.
He didn't want to hurt the baby. That was not his intention. And
he was doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. So I'm just saying that also, maybe we were both saying the same thing, would perhaps upgrade an action which is in and of itself detrimental into something that is legally beneficial. I gain a kiyuma mitzvah, or as Tzvi was mentioned yesterday, the fact that he can eat kodshim, right? That's a legal benefit, and maybe since the action fits into category B, group B over here, that inherently is destructive, the mitzvah element here, the legal element, the kiyuma mitzvah converts it into a tikkun. What else am I thinking now? Who could now read my mind? Kriya. Let's go back to Kriya. So we spoke about Kriya al-Meso. Now, it's possible that in the case of Kriya al-Meso, one could argue that since Maleches Korea belongs to group B, which means in and of itself ripping a garment is destructive, but the Kiyum HaMitzvah element, i.e. the legal halachic element, is what transforms it from a Maleches Kilkul into a Maleches Tikkun.
How about Kriya to get to food? I mean, I want to open a chip bag.
So again, that Kriya is destructive. Or you mean to say because it's constructive. Yeah, so that's a different discussion. Yeah, I would say that's constructive, but that has nothing to do with us today. That has nothing to do with halacha. That might be constructive because I have no access to the food unless, right, even during the weekday, you know, I can't get to the food. I got a bag of carrots here, but I got to rip open the bag to get the carrots. So that might be a tikkun, but that's not what I was discussing. I'm discussing the following question. Is a legal tikkun or a legal kilkul to be considered in halacha? We got the minchas chinuch, we got the wrong impression from the minchas chinuch. We were too superficial. We thought that the minchas chinuch was saying no, that there's no relevancy whatsoever when you deal with tikkun and kilkul of the legal aspect. Forget about the legal aspect. just look with your eye and look at the mitzvahs, what's going on, as we say. That's a falsification. That's an oversimplification of the Michas Chinuch. We're right. And in general, you know, for 34 out of 39 malachas, that is correct. The legal element is totally irrelevant. But in five malachas, now we've isolated, the legal dimension is very, very important. Why? Because these are malachos that l'chore don't even belong to our membership club. They should be left out from the get-go of the membership in malachas. They're destructive. How can they be considered malachas? The answer is, it's the legal matir or mitzvah that makes them into malachas. Okay, I guess we'll stop here because it's getting
on. So
what about Sreifas Fas Kohen? Once again, we get back to the following discussion. He's destroying Eitzim in order to create a molten lead, and that is destructive. Maybe we could suggest that in that case, it's the Kiyuma Mitzvah that makes it into a team. I just want to see if we finished here. We're on the bottom of 188. Is there any other point that we missed over here? Just one second. I'll be honest with you. This last piece was, for me personally, a big letdown. I don't think he's on the mark here, in my humble opinion. But again, I shouldn't have said that because I don't want to prejudice you. You should really read it with an open mind. Maybe you'll be impressed by what he says. He claims that Zoreah itself is essentially a Meleches Kilkul. Because what happens to the seed is rikavon. How do you say that in English? It decays?
It rots.
So I said decay. Rots is better. It rots. And therefore, you've taken a chita, which... Now, you and I might ask, what do you mean a chita? Who eats chita? When was the last time you ate a raw grain of wheat or barley?
They're good.
So I don't know if they're good or not, but the Gemara itself talks about the bracha issue. Kakose sachita, what bracha do you make on a chita?
You have to go to wheat fields to do it.
And then there's something called keli. Are you familiar with that word, keli? It's a pasuk in, I think it's a parashas Kedoshim. And you roast grains, you know. So roasted grains make a certain kind of cereal that, you know, if you're into health, you might enjoy that. You know, bran cereals and all the best. So he takes this chito, which he could roast on an open fire and make it into a cereal, and he puts it into the ground as a seed. Now, it's interesting. Some seeds, you know, are not worth much. You know, you can't do anything with them, but you can grow a whole orchard from a seed. So that's the greatness of a seed. But let's say I would convince you that you could eat these seeds in one form or another. Now when I plant the seed, it's inherently destructive. So he wants to know, how do we assume that in the case of Zoreah Kalayim, that that's a malacha that's inherently constructive, and therefore the Minchas Chinuch says that the legal aspect of generating Kalayim is totally irrelevant. It's not inherently constructive, it's inherently destructive. That's what he claims. Again, I have, you know, my comments on this, but I'll leave my comments out. I'll let you evaluate it without my prejudice.
There's now three levels. There's subjectively what the person is trying to do. Objectively, is, I think what he meant, that if you don't take into account any person's specific intentions, the wheat seed is good to eat on its own. Now became bad when it's in the ground. So the first change is a lower economic value. That's objective. And then there's the halachic perspective, like the legal perspective we said. So there's three.
Which might help us in those destructive malachas.
Yeah, so there's three.
So Shmuel, well, I don't know what you're going. Well, I don't know where you're driving at, but I'm going to tell you what I get out of what you said. Okay, that's not fair, but what I got out of what you said, because I only heard, you know, yeah, you said a lot of things. I only my mind, you know, focused on one point that you made. In the case of planting, if you accept the premise of the Tolna Reva that taking a seed and putting it in the ground is in itself destructive, then the subjective element, or the kavana that we spoke about at the beginning of today's discussion, is crucial. Why am I putting this seed in the ground? I want to plant and grow a whole tree of.
So you're still not kilkul.
And therefore, if you know, I'm willing to sacrifice one seed, which is worth a half a grush. I'm dating myself when I talk about a grush, right? And I'm willing to sacrifice a half a grush for the sake of a whole tree. You know, imagine an orange seed that would grow into an orchard, you know, an orange tree, you know, and again, for the rest of you know, I'd be as goyel. I can market, you know, who knows how many tons of bushels of oranges. So that I wouldn't define it as kilkul until, again, if I accept his premise, until I isolate, I cut myself off from his kavana. You know, if a man wants to destroy seeds and he throws it into the ground, there's a hole in the ground, he throws it in, and that's how he's going to destroy the seeds, that would make it into kilkul. But if his intention is to plant these seeds, then the overall picture is better than worse. And the assets outweigh the benefits, and therefore it's a melechus tikkun. That's what I got out of what you said, Shmuel. I'm sure you said a lot more, but that's what Berzon got out of what you said.
That was good.
Yeah.
We're going well.
There was a discussion about if the kilkul or the tikkun comes immediate or later.
Right. That was Rabbi Akiva. That was Rabbi Natomix.
When I throw a seed in, it's a secret. For sure it's going to arrive, but it may not grow. I could have
right.
success.
That's he makes that point. Yeah, we're not even sure if it's going to take or not. Right. So therefore, what?
For sure, it's going to be makalka. That's for sure. It's going to happen. Therefore, it's going to grow. It may grow, and we hope it'll grow. Right. This is kavana that's going to grow, but who knows if it's going to happen?
I just want to point out that if you accept his premise, then you're in really deep. Deep trouble here with the Minchas Chinuch. I mean, the whole point of the Minchas Chinuch was that your Zorea Kelayim, and since Meleches Ria isn't in itself a constructive Melacha, I don't care about the legal implications of Kelayim, the fact that Kelayim is also Manna. He's taking Meleches Zorea out of the group of the 34, group A, he's putting it into group B. And that's totally antithetical to the Minchas Chinuch, and it really upsets everything that we've been saying. So it leaves you kind of hanging. I would rather look at Zriya in a whole different light. You know, let's look at the total picture rather than that particular seed that's worth, like I said, a half a grush. My friends, this is, I think, the last year. Unless you're up to next week, I don't know. That really depends on the lady folk. You know, because from now until Sukkot, there's a heck of a lot to do. I mean, we may be in charge of buying the Dalet Minim. You know what I'm saying? That's our job next week. In some cases, the wife will buy the Dalet Minim too. You know, now you can buy a set. You know, and just it's like potluck kind of thing. You know, you buy a Jack in the Box. You know, what?
In the supermarket even.
Yeah, so you can buy Dalet Minim in about 10 seconds. You know, well, depending on the lines in Osharad, but and there's no big deal about it. But then you could go through every min. And check it according to all the halachas. You know, you bring your magnifying glass and all the dust and yams, and then it could take you days and days till you end up with Dalet Minim, and even then you're depressed because somebody points out, you know, hey, you didn't notice this, right? But you know, we need to help our wives during this period in many different ways, whether it's cooking. I don't know how many of you are chefs here, but even if you're not a chef, but you have to help your wife peel potatoes or cut vegetables. We have a vegetable that my wife loves. I also love it. And it's very hard to cut it. It's called, just give me a second. It's a certain kind of a gourd. What's it called?
Butternut.
Yeah, what's it called in English?
Butternut squash.
Have you ever tried to cut it up? It's like, are there machines that would do it? I keep telling my wife, buy a machine, because I'm getting, you know, my hand is breaking off trying to cut this thing, you know.
You need a good knife.
So on both sides, I'm going to leave it like this. We'll get together after Sukkot and Mirtz Hashem. If anybody wants to have a shiur next week, let me know today if you can. If not, let me know on Yom. Just call me on Yom Kippur. You know, just kidding. Let me know, and we can get together maybe Sunday. I don't know. After Sunday, it's pushing it, you know. And at this point, I want to wish everyone a Gmar Ksima Tova. And it's been a lot of fun, a lot of work, and a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.